All righty. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for tuning in to the happy hour here on Guardian Radio 96.9. We're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. Listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or BTC Flow Channel 612. You can also download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. Remember, you can text us on the Guardian Radio text line at 422-GR96. That's 422-4796, powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. You can also call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4259, or call us toll-free from the Family Islands at 300-5720. Remember, follow us on all of our social media pages. We are there on Twitter, now known as X. We're on Facebook and we're on Instagram. That's the happy hour. This is DeAndra Cartwright, and I am so happy that you decided to join us. To those who are just hearing me for the very first time on this particular program, and you know, I've been with Guardian since the very beginning, so my voice may not be new to you on other programs, but this program is brand new. We are just entering our third month, I think it is, and this is a brand new concept that we have. So what we're trying to do with the happy hour is that in the world of talk radio, we want to bring you positivity, we want to bring you optimism, we want to bring you joy, we want to really make a way and all of the negativity that we hear on talk radio to only hear about the good stuff that's happening. And so that's what the happy hour is all about. And we're happy and delighted that you decided to stay with us here on this Saturday. Now we know it's busy out there. Please stay safe as you do your last minute holiday shopping. Lots going on, both in the shopping areas, on the road. So stay safe as you get that all done. And remember, our love is not only shown by what we can purchase others, but in how we treat others. So please keep that in mind. We don't need to break the bank to remind people that we love them. And 'tis the season to be good to one another. So jumping right into the program today, and I know we're going to have such fun because our guest is a longtime friend of mine, and I'm so happy to have them join us today. And so I'm going to read their very extensive biography. This person has done so much in their life that I am just so happy. I don't know where to start really with them, but this bio is going to give us a bit more as to say where's the way forward because he's done so much. So, Donato Hepburn is joining us today, all the way from Canada. He came home to us, so we're happy to have him with us. Donato Hepburn is an inquisitive storyteller who explores the cross sections of culture, humanity, expression, and art. He writes and performs poetry and prose, celebrating Blackness and Caribbean life. He edits everything from books to essays to press releases, acts in stage plays, television shows, and films. He enjoys public speaking and produces podcasts. He audio engineers and is presently creating two television shows that showcase the depth, beauty, and storytelling prowess of the Bahamas. As a diasporic Bahamian living in Toronto, Donato proudly preserves the Bahamas' culture through storytelling. In his quest to find his calling, he has served as a Foreign Service Officer at the Bahamian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, a Priority Manager in the Office of the Prime Minister of the Bahamas, an Editor-in-Chief, a Research Assistant, and currently a Policy Analyst in the Tourism and Culture Division of the Government of Ontario. Did I tell y'all he's done everything possible? I was not lying. There's more. And I'm going to let him get into the details, but I just want to give y'all a quick overview of just who we have on our show today. So, Donato actually started acting at the age of 9 in grade 5. Can you even remember what you were doing at the age of 9 in grade 5, ladies and gentlemen? He was a quiet child. I mean, I'm not sure if I believe that so very much because Toronto is so full of life. I don't know. But his love of arts was born out of his love for stillness and solitude, right? That we got to talk about that because that to me that sounds like oxymoronic almost. It sounds ironic. It's just like how could you are in the arts but you want solitude? I don't know. You were part of Donato was a part of the debate team, the drama club, gentlemen's club, and other groups in high school. See, you this person. And then you were also the presidential assistant of quite a few entities dealing with writing, focusing on literature, poetry. You've loved storytelling since the beginning of your career in the arts. And then there are some things you want to, we're going to talk a bit more about our Bohemian history, particularly our history of slavery, and the power of storytelling. I really want to focus on that because I believe other persons may be telling our history in a different way. And storytelling is something we've been doing since for generations. So it's pretty incredible to know that these are efforts that are currently happening to tell our story the way that it was meant to be told. And I love this part right here that you're going to tell us a bit more as well. And you have professional expertise in this area, that entertainment is a business that requires business acumen, timing, hard work, and talent. And then you're going to tell us about how to pursue our dreams and anything is possible. He has acting credits and stage management credits all over. He is a professional actor over there in Canada. He has been a background actor. He's been writing poetry. He's been podcasting. He's involved with television shows. Ladies and gentlemen, Donato Hepburn, our very own, born and grown here in the Bahamas, making us proud in Canada. Donato, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Deandra. As I listen to that introduction, a part of me is like, who is this person that you're actually talking about? But first, I want to say congratulations to you on your new show. It's incredible to see people like yourself just really giving back to the community and being there and just highlighting the positivity that's happening in today's age, just because there's so much that's going on. So first off, congratulations, and I am honored, truly, truly honored to be here. And just to start our lovely discussion, I just want to say that storytelling for me has always been something that I've been interested in, and I think has been born and bred in the Bahamas. If there's one thing that I want people to take away from all of this, I think it's just that point right there that Bahamians are so expressive. We speak with our hands, we're animated, we dive into stories about Bookie and Barabi and all of these other different things. And for me, that was my guiding light, definitely, as I grew up, and even now as I navigate this crazy thing that we call life.
I can only imagine. And as you were talking about Bookie and Barabi, I was also thinking about, have you ever heard a Bahamian tell a story or explain a situation straight up? No. There is always a roundabout way. And then, you know, what has happened in the newer generations, what had happened was.
That's the preamble. You know what had happened was, you know something good is going to come after that, right?
Yes.
It's going to be embellishment and, you know, all of the prose and all of these different things. And what's so fascinating is that I think naturally we do so many incredible things when we tell stories. That follows along with, you know, traditional storytelling, with utilizing metaphors and different sentences and imageries and all of these things, but it's so innate to us that I don't think that we actively think about it sometimes. It's just a part of us, right?
Yes.
And even in my response right there, I think I highlighted exactly what you said, you know, that preamble.
Exactly. And then also the most important, well, not the most important, but one of the important elements of it. And I've learned this from my time abroad as well. People tell us, but we don't hear it ourselves because we're so used to it, that we sound like we're singing when we're talking because we actually put so much effort into how we say things. It's the tone, the inflection, our voices going up and down, but the emotion, just talking. And like, we can hear it when we focus on it and be like, oh my goodness, are we actually doing that? Yes, we are. And we've always been this way. And the thing is that people go to school for this, but we do it naturally.
Exactly. For us, you know, from when we're little kids, I think from something as small as being a part of a production, growing up, we learn how to enunciate, we learn how to speak, we learn how to really express ourselves. And that's one thing that I think as Bahamians, we should just be very, very proud of, that a lot of these things that we learn that are so innate to our storytelling, it's profound and it really helps us with other aspects of our lives, with being confident, with understanding who we are, with not allowing people to take advantage of us, right? It's all of those things that I think are kind of wrapped up in the lovely envelope, that nice little package of storytelling that's so incredible.
And you mentioned something also very important, learning it from a young age and how that makes a positive impact on us, our development, building self-confidence, self-esteem, evolving our talents. And you yourself, you started when you were 9. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like from the age of 9, grade 5, when you got into this, how did you get into it? And then at that point, what could you say was the evolution from the before versus after?
So for me, and I can vividly remember this because the first production that I was ever a part of was a religious satire, and it was called Imago Dei. And it was actually written by a Bahamian, Rupert Mizek. I believe he was, and this was a little while ago, so don't quote me on this, the chief reporter at the Tribune. And I'm sure he's known, he's produced various different types of work, but he was actually a friend of my brother, Wellington Hepburn, and I had 17 words in his play. I can't remember those words now, but I remember that I went on stage and at first I was terrified. It was actually at the Dundas, I can recall this.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was at the Dundas, and I
Shout out to the
remember,
Dundas for being the growing grounds for a lot of those in the arts. And please, ladies and gentlemen, if you can support the Dundas, please try to do so. We need them.
I completely agree. And just to tack on to that point, the level of work we see coming out of the Dundas, it is professional quality. There are so many different partnerships out there that the Dundas has with other theater companies, in Prague, in various different parts of the world, and preeminent companies out there. So supporting our art, supporting our own, it's so incredibly important. So again, shout out to the Dundas for that. And I remember just, walking out on that stage and just feeling the lights and thinking to myself that, what am I doing here? Like, what is actually happening? And I remember, like, the director, who was also Rupert, he just spoke to me and he's like, deliver the lines like this and say it like this. And after a while, we played around with it. And I was always a quiet child. So having that moment, to be able to express myself, to be able to say those words and like put on the persona of another person was just, it was really freeing, actually. Freeing in so many aspects. And from that point moving forward, the evolution of me as an artist, I think embodying those different art forms, embodying specifically for acting, mind you, just being able to put on different personas has really helped me because, again, with our storytelling, we're animated, right? Many times when we're telling a story, you'll see people, they switch voices, their voice goes up, they speak very quickly or very slowly, and they really want to get their character to come across. That's acting, that's what we have done. And for me, the evolution has been through two, I would say, media forms. So it would be acting and definitely writing for me. So I've been a part of, the high school drama club. I've done that. I was in a production of A Raisin in the Sun. We were gonna
So
do Grease.
powerful.
And that production was at the Shirley Street Theater.
Oh my goodness, you're taking us back in time.
Yes. I'm actually having visions of rehearsal for that in grade 11, which is insane. I won't do the math and say when I graduated from high school,
Yeah, hey, let's keep the listening audience in suspense about how old you are.
And they will forever be in suspense with that one. I
There
will
you
say
go.
that.
Yes. Maybe we can have a
But
trivia question at the end. Ha
there we go. We can do that,
ha
actually. Drop little tidbits of information, see if they're really listening. I
There
love
you go.
that. But being on that stage too, again, there's just so much history. There's so much history involved with just knowing that there are so many people who have been a part of, our artistry and our legacy. And for me as an artist, I reveled in that fact that I got to be a part of that. And that really helped me as my evolution as an artist. When I went away to school, I was also a part of, I attended the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario, in Canada. And I was again a part of the drama club there, just refining my skills in various different productions. I did 4 years of Shakespeare, so A Raisin in the Sun. Apologies, still thinking about high school, but I did, oh, it was Romeo and Juliet. We
Oh,
also,
Romeo, oh, Romeo.
yes, Wherefore Art Thou, Romeo?
Romeo.
We also did A Winter's Tale. I played King Polixenes. So, it's always fun to play royalty, that's
Of
always a good
course,
time.
darling, of course.
Exactly. And from there, I always knew that I wanted to go a bit further. So I also did a certificate in drama from the Toronto Academy of Acting for Film and Television. And from there, I was really able to delve
Hold on.
into the.
Oh, hold on. I
Yeah.
got to stop you there.
Of
Because
course.
I find sometimes, and I think this is a Bahamian trait. We accomplish so much, but we don't give ourselves credit. And sometimes we have to wait till other people do. So I want to stop and just congratulate you on actually getting academic credentials for drama. Like, come on, who do we know that does things like that? That's incredible.
Thank you. I am truly humbled by that fact. I will say that. And it's actually very important because the entertainment industry, it's important for you to always be upskilling yourself. You may not need formal credentials, but you should always be on the top of your game, right? Whether that's getting a degree, doing conferences, meeting with people. It's just so powerful to always know exactly how to audition, what to say, how to enunciate, and really networking too. A lot of those things are so powerful. And just to swing back a little bit again to the Dundas, what I will say is that the work again that you see coming out of the Dundas, though there may not be a formal program, but the level of training, the level of acting that's coming out of the Dundas, absolutely incredible. It's akin to as if you were doing that, tertiary level education and just getting on stage. So kudos to Dr. Bethel. Kudos to everyone there. It's just been absolutely incredible.
We're hoping to have them back on in the new year to talk a bit more about their upcoming productions that they're actually having auditions for, I believe, in another few weeks, or maybe they've already started. I'll double check and then post those onto our Facebook page. I'm sharing them there. But they're going to have their spring productions coming up, and I really hope that we continue to support the arts. We heard when we had a couple of the folks who participated in Shakespeare in Paradise on a couple of weeks ago. They actually shared with us how they had some of the high schoolers they put on special performances, matinees, and how those high schoolers just felt so excited to see a play being performed, but also know that there is somewhere where they fit in. And when you talked about in entertainment, there can also be solitude. There's something for everyone. You don't have to be on the forefront. You can be in the background making things happen. You literally are an example of how to make it work for you. And so after you got your credential, then it kind of just took off even further because now you've done so much background work. You've done stage work, you've done television work, you've done podcasting. Like take us a bit more before we have about 5 more minutes before we head to our first break. Tell us a little bit more about that trajectory.
Sure. So, because I always knew I wanted to perform, to be on stage or in film or television, for me, I'm a methodical person. So I said, in order to really be the best in front of the camera or on stage, I need to have an understanding of what's going on behind the scenes. So I made a conscious decision to try and do stage management, to direct, and to really understand the intricacies of, let's say, for example, a play. With having that understanding, it allows you to perform better as an actor, to be ever present. You understand the notes, you understand how what you're saying is resonating with the audience. You also understand, if you're trying to project your voice a little bit further, how it comes across, or even saying an aside. So it really helps you to break down and to dissect your performance. And I think that ties back again to the concept of entertainment being really a business too, because we need to understand that it's a collective. It really is a collective, and having all of that knowledge about, stage management and directing and acting or wardrobe, it makes you stronger as a person, because the one quote that really resonated for me from a lot of my training is that in the entertainment business, the only star is the project itself. Not the actual person. You may have Steven Spielberg, you may have an A-list actor, and all of those things are great, but at the end of the day, you want the work itself to be that sublime entity. And I think, with podcasting, for instance, and audio engineering for myself, and all of these other additional things, it just helps to make you more of a well-rounded person at the end of the day, so you can just have a better understanding of how all of the pieces fit together. It's kind of like, playing Tetris. You just have to understand how each piece fits and where you put each one.
I can imagine having to learn the purpose of each piece and then also how you can play your part as each piece, but then perhaps learning how to also function as each piece as time goes by would also help teach us the lesson that these things don't just happen overnight. It happens with time, it happens with commitment, it happens with experience, it happens with passion, knowing that, I want this. How can I become a better version of myself and get this done?
Exactly. I think it was Octavia Spencer, who was in The Help, who said, it took her 16 years to become an overnight sensation. So, and again, that is one person who is at the top of her game, right? For every one Octavia Spencer out there, you have hundreds, if not thousands or tens of thousands of people who probably didn't make it to that level. But that doesn't negate all of the hard work that they put in. It doesn't negate them building up themselves. It doesn't negate all of the energy and time and positivity and connections. It's so important to, in this industry, to know who you are as a person too, because it's an industry of no's. You will hear every top person out there say, you hear no's 95% of the times until you get that yes, until you get that opportunity. So it's definitely one of you continually, dusting yourself off and just working as hard as you can. And also realizing that there's so much that is with not within your control. You can be extremely talented. You can be very, well rehearsed for this role, but you may not have that particular look they're looking for. Or you may not have that right chemistry with someone else. So those are the things that aren't within your control that you just have to be fine with at the end of the day.
I just love the life lessons that you're giving us today, about passion, purpose, patience, along this journey. And to be quite honest, it's necessary as we pursue our desires within our hobbies, within our professions, within our personal and our professional lives. It's just, you're teaching us a lot here. I hope that everybody can stay tuned here with the happy hour with the Andrew Cartwright. I have Donato Hepburn joining us today, all the way from Toronto, Canada, here on the show with us today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Guardian Radio 96.9. Welcome back to the happy hour here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. This is DeAndra Cartwright, and today I am joined by Donato Hepburn, actor extraordinaire, playwright, podcaster, audio engineer, everything. He's anything to do with drama and entertainment. This guy has done it, and we're so happy to have him join us. And I think he actually has some pieces of poetry that he is wanting to share with us. And I feel like, we should hear more of this on our airwaves. So, Donato, without further ado, please.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So this poem is called I Remember the Good Old Days, and I'll just launch right into it, and then I guess we can chat about it a little bit after. I remember the good old days, observing the imminent ways the golden sun kissed the Aquitanid ocean at a morning's dew, while lying in pink-encrusted sand under gracious palm trees, which avails the wind's cadence to ensue. I remember the good old days, watching the Caribbean Sea as it undulates with blue and white cascades. Graciously, it caresses the shoreline, then lavishly, it further pervades. I remember the good old days, being mesmerized by the gleaming evening sky and the beauty that's made of seeing a yellow, red, and orange sky laced with different shades. I remember the good old days, eating crack conch and grouper, basking in the sun's familiar glow while flowing to that bombastic Junkanoo bassline as they plateau, listening to charismatic mothers compelling fathers and captivating grandparents tell enchanting fables about playing in the backyard all day with mischievous friends disobeying orders until they were unable, then sneaking out to commune with friends despite the complications, or even about national independence from the dependence of codependence that plagued our nation. I remember these good old days, characterized by happiness in innumerable ways, of warm, engaging Bahamians you meet everywhere you go, or by an event like Carnival, which redefines a great show, because simply listening to the rhythmic reverberation of the steel drum as it thump, thump, thump affects your mental, leaving one in a pure state of cultural ecstasy, high off rhythm's blues, emphasizing how music is so transcendental. I remember the spoken word artists as they imparted bullets of wisdom from their loaded verbal guns. I remembered those wicked jazz artists as they scat, scat, scatted to their heart's content, not to be outdone. I remember these times because this poem is for any mother who wishes to impart knowledge to her children. This is for the eternal child in all of us that wish again for simpler days. This poem is for the skeptic that didn't believe we could achieve greatness. We have and always will. This poem is for every one of us, majestic nations on this great earth, maintained by strength, intelligence and perseverance, and millions filled with immense pride. And that's the end of the poem. So that's my ode to the Caribbean. I remember the good old days.
That was powerful. Like, I feel like I need to clap. Like, ladies and gentlemen, if you could have seen the expressions on his face as he was performing that piece, it's incredible because the words themselves were painting imagery of the tale that he was telling. And he was performing it as though he was in front of millions of people. Oh, goodness, you really are an artist extraordinaire.
Oh, again, thank you so much. I would say those words really came from just analysis and exploration of our home and who we are as a people. You know, I've always been so curious about how we live, what we do, and it just seems so fitting to create an ode to that, you know, because one of the things that gets to me, and this is as a Bahamian and as a Caribbean person living elsewhere, while it's so beautiful to experience other cultures, to understand other people, sometimes it comes with a little bit of hesitation toward where you come from or from other people, where people sometimes look down on people from the Caribbean. And for me, this poem is, you know, a bit of a fight to show that we are just as good, if not better. We can compete with everyone out there. We're just as strong. We collectivize. We're just as powerful. And I think, especially today, with, you know, so much division that may be happening, that it's so important just to have that unity and to understand one's sense of self and just where we come from.
I completely agree with everything that you have said. Honestly, that sounds like an award-winning poem. I hope that you have received awards for that because, again, the use of your words to paint that picture, the emotion that reminds us of our homeland, like, I could just imagine hearing that while away from home. I'm being reminded I am a Bahamian. This is home. Oh, how I miss it. And that's what makes me a true, true Bahamian. And then you put inside that award-winning piece inside my head already. We already win the awards for that. The group one, a crack honk. I was like, yes, that's Bahamian. He's not reading from anywhere else. That's a true Bahamian poem right now.
One piece of information about that poem. So I wrote that years ago, and I was a student, and I actually got to perform the poem for a lady named Margaret Atwood. So she is one of the mothers of Canadian poetry and literature, and she's actually the creator of the books that The Handmaid's Tales are
I was gonna
written
say, I
on.
recognize that name.
Yeah. So I've been super grateful that when I performed this poem for her, and she's a lovely person, very, very lovely person. But you know, you expect someone of that stature to get back to you and to say, you know, this, and this needs to change. And she looked at me, and again, I'm not saying this in a boastful manner, but she said, "Don't change a word of it. Keep it as is." That for me was one of the highest accolades I have ever received in my life. And to this day, that story just sits with me.
Oh, congratulations. That's better than being told by your teacher you got an A plus on there. You have a master of literature telling you that your work is perfect.
Definitely a lot to process, but yes, received with so much humility and so much grace.
No, that that.
Definitely.
Hey, I don't know what they say. Sometimes they say actors, have a certain type of aura around them, but you're very modest and humble fella. That's great. No, that's incredible, honestly. And then having the opportunity to perform that for Ms. Atwood, I can only imagine how great of an opportunity that would have been. And the fact that to this day, even though you wrote that years ago, that you perform it with such passion, really shows your dedication to your craft, but also to the piece within itself. And I believe you also had another piece as well that you want
I
to share
do.
with us today.
Yes, I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, if we will be giving out his contact information at the end of it. So if you want to help continue these beautiful works of art, or even to support, because honestly, this is art that you're hearing here on the Happy Hour on Guardian Radio 96.9.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I will say one sentence about this upcoming poem. So the name of it is Hide and Seek. And in a nutshell, it's about Black excellence.
I love that already.
As a child, I remember playing my favorite game of hide and seek. I hid hours upon hours in a darkly lit closet containing bleached clothes and memories that last a lifetime. 3, 2, 1, get ready, I'm coming, yelled my friend from an adjacent room. And I remained quiet, incredibly silent as he approached, remembering to regulate my breathing along with the quaint whistle of the wind outside. I heard the footsteps as he cautiously advanced. Naruto, where are you? He yelled as a shadow cast itself on me, made from the receding light. He walked past, and I silently rejoiced. As time progresses, I become more complacent with my disposition and yearning to be chosen. Minutes to hours, hours to days, days to months and years, and I realize that I continue to hide from and to be sought out by others. We hide among the darkness, wishing our shadows mimic the isolated light that subsists. We conceal our true essence by giving others the keys to our black discourse, hoping we're accepted by constricting our arcane experiences. We alter our speech from what a guan, what's good, everything cool, and you all right, to hello, how are you? Is everything fine? And are you all right? To comply with the universally verbose language of acceptance. We, confused by our own histories, define ourselves by 50 shades of Starbucks, mocha, cinnamon, morena, caramel, and my personal favorite, pitch black. These classifications result in deadly self-hatred. But my skin will not be my epitaph. Adorned by the lamenting words of others, here lies the half-truth of a whole life. Here lie the powerful and pervasive but gravely unmasked memories of Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Tamora Rice, and scores of others. Our crevice cracked and capricious skin is stunning, and though we bleed the same red as everyone, our veins strong and supple, crisscrossed like the etched tracks of the Underground Railroad, while our blood, warm and resilient, purely drips with red memories of an unforgettable past. Yes, our lives matter, as tragic and cathartic as they are. And because of this, excellence exists. Small snippets of black echelons illustrate power. Rosa Parks sat to bust the racial paradigm of generational separation. Dr. Martin Luther King equivocally fought for equality during the UNSO civil rights movement so we could live in a liberated world. Maya Angelou wrote of the rights and wrongs that contributed to our constituent community for so long while penning the concerns of what we as a people do wrong. Simply put, black is brave, bold, beloved, beautiful, baffling, but most of all, my black is personal. The game of hide and seek never ends. Only the circumstances and people change. The next time you hide your blackness or others try to do it for you, seek to understand that black is not solely a color, nor a race, just a race or preference. It is a harmonious and beautiful symbol of unity, expression, and complexity. It's not meant to be hidden nor sought. That's my poem. That's the second poem.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you can hear me. I'm clapping. That was I know incredible seems like a word I keep on saying, but it was amazing.
Thank
And then
you.
what is it? The half truths of a whole life. I'm like your play on words is just magnificent.
That good Bahamian schooling.
That's what that is.
That basis.
The thoughts that were coming through my mind as you were reading it. Was that I wonder how we perceive ourselves in the present if we truly understand our past, and does that have an impact? I mean, I know it does, but do we think about it often enough to think about the impact of our past and that of our ancestors, of our family members that are still alive today, and those that have gone on, and how we are today? And I believe this is something that you have. Like it's a part of your passion about getting Bahamians to really learn a bit more about our history and the history of slavery and its impact on us. And I
Yes.
heard that reflected in your poem.
Yes. Bahamian history, our slave history, it is so important. I mean, a lot of us, we have our last names, Roll, Delaveau, all of these last names that are the names of essentially, the enslavers from way back in the 16th century or so. One of the things that I will always say is that learning your past, learning where you came from, having an understanding of what your ancestors went through, it is pivotal to your present and to your future. Our slave history is probably one of the most dynamic ever. And I'm not even trying to make any comparisons to, let's say, for instance, the Maroons in Jamaica, which is absolutely incredible. But if you think about, people such as Pompey, Poor Blind Kate, Dick DeVoe, all of these people, they were leaders in their own right. I mean, for instance, let's look at Pompey. So in the 16th century, he and his kin literally stole a boat from their enslaver to sail from Exuma by themselves to go to the capital city, which is Nassau, to stop the then governor of the Bahamas, James Carmichael Smith, from transferring them to another island. And if you think about the optics and if you think about everything that's involved, they were intelligent enough to sail that boat. And they were also intelligent enough that they actually wrote to the government in the United Kingdom. So, a lot of times we have this conception that our ancestors, they were painted in a particular way. They were very downtrodden. They weren't intelligent. They didn't understand what was going on when, in actuality, yes, there are instances of that, but very much so, our enslaved history is one that is very dynamic. It is so dynamic. And ex the story of Pompey, I would say, definitely highlights that for sure.
I could imagine that, what we hear most about Pompeii is the rebellion. But I fancy a lot of persons listening in may not have known about the boat ride to New Providence, but may not have known about the letter writing to the UK. Because also it's about, who's it that says that the history is written by the victors. And so sometimes we really don't know what our history is because it didn't survive, or it didn't survive in the way that we've been taught to appreciate most. And as you've told us this entire program, storytelling is something that has been with Bahamians for generations. And we know a lot of our history because of it.
Yes, definitely so. And that's one thing I really wish we would dive into a little bit more. I mean, even in the schools, for instance, I remember in this was grade 10, when you choose your electives, you can choose which subjects you want to study. And I took history. And of the 20 students in my history class, I think I was the only one who wanted to study Bahamian history. Everyone else wanted to do world history or, European history. And it just baffled me even at that age because there's just so much power in understanding where you came from, in just having that basis of information. And I think and I really wish that even within the school curriculums now that there's more of a mandatory emphasis placed on that type of learning so we can have an understanding of who we are as a people.
I completely agree. I think that it should be standardized. I know that we touch a bit on it in primary school and social studies, but perhaps it's not, obviously, as a younger child, you may not be able to fully appreciate the realities of what slavery meant, and that period of time, because you're talking about centuries at that point. And then in high school, you had the choice whether to study it or not. And even when you do get to study it, you may not be looking at the full scope of what it means. And then honestly, from, I mean, my personal experience, and I took history as well, there are certain portions of our history we seemingly just jump straight over. I was just having a conversation with somebody literally this week that we had segregation in this country. We had segregation. We don't talk about it, and it's not as fully documented as it could be, but there was segregation, as simple as inside of our churches. Being a primary example, Christ Church Cathedral was segregated, and this is why St. Agnes was created, a part of the reason why St. Agnes was created, to allow free Black men to go to church. I mean, there were photos that came up in they were going around on social media earlier this year about the banks and how the majority of the employees, if not all of them, were white. I mean, we don't talk enough about that. I fancy, you know, again, I don't know if it's that perhaps persons think that we shouldn't know so much, or perhaps it may be too much, but in order for us to truly appreciate where we are, we have to understand better from where we came. From all the way back to the time which our ancestors would have been enslaved, all the way up to present, and not sidestepping what happened generations ago. Because if we don't fully appreciate that, you know, persons were not able to live in particular areas, worship in particular places, go to particular schools, then we may not be able to fully appreciate why we are at a particular place in our life. Why is our society built in the way that it is? If your grandparents, your great grandparents, your great great grandparents were not able to have access to the education that they deserved, then they may not have been able to get the employment that was possibly available to them, because they were not able to get that employment to have that education, then they were not able to do the same for their children. And then the cycle continued until you have cycle and generational chain breakers, but it didn't need to be that way. So it's almost like, how do we actually examine that? Do we know our history? And on that note, I actually just want to remind folks that we have a few genealogy projects that are happening in the Bahamas. They've been going on for quite some time. And if you Google them, there are I think two of them that actually follow the maternal lines. And so you can track your family, not all families, but the majority of them, because I think one of these was actually a PhD study for one of our students when he was abroad. But he's continued it. And you can track it all the way back to the 1500s, 1600s. And if you actually are also inclined, you can go to the Department of Archives to get copies of your ancestors' marriage certificates, birth certificates. You can see a lot of things. You can find out your history. You can actually look, because my own family has done this, to just try to understand our history better. We've tried to track down like the slave registers and everything, just to show people, because you know we have these certain perceptions in society, of we may only come from a certain background. No, we're all mixed for the most part. Like, let's just look at where's our history, and then we can see how that history has been wiped out. As simple as you talking about those last names, we inherited last names we know nothing of.
Exactly. Even for myself, my last name is Hepburn, which is a Scottish last name. And if you really just dive into it, just to have a better understanding of, what does that mean? How does that resonate with you and your family, and just understanding your lineage? I agree that there is so much power in understanding just our history. And sometimes I even question that, not putting information out there, or not question, but I would say that this is a statement for me that it's doing a disservice to the Bahamian people, because we should know. It's our right to that information, right? There, people generally say there is knowledge, there is power in knowledge. For me, I tend to say it's the application of that knowledge where power lies, because you can have, knowledge ad nauseam be given to you. Case in point, example would be the internet. But if you don't know how to apply that knowledge, particularly to your life, or to simply learn lessons from it, then having that information, there's not much value in it, I would say.
Oh, and that's very much true, which is why programs such as this and highlighting persons such as yourselves that have interests and actually talking a bit more about our history in the ways that our people, because we have to give the information in different ways. We can provide it in academic means, and we know for our history through the times of enslavement, you have persons such as Dr. Chris Curry that has written extensively about it. You have persons such as Dr. Nyambi Campbell. Hall Campbell, and I think she has like three names now, who's also done a lot of work in terms of reparation and getting us to understand a bit more about our history. But outside of the academic, outside of the international diplomatic side of things, how are we really bringing that to our people? And storytelling really is a way that we can get that through. And I honestly feel like, as you know, time is flying on this, we're gonna have to let you come back to talk to us a bit more about, well, how do we actually do that? And in the few minutes that we have remaining, if you could, how, just give us a tidbit through storytelling, what would be your approach?
It's almost as if this question was planned. And it's so funny, just so everyone knows, it really was not. This question was not planned, but it's a perfect segue into two projects I'm working on. And I won't go into the intricacies of the projects just because they're still in development right now. But I am a huge proponent of learning about history, as I'm sure the listeners are, just maybe acutely aware now. And I'm working on two television shows that highlight Bahamian history, who we are, where we come from. But it's through particular lenses where one is a dramedy, which is a comedy slash drama that's evaluating a certain particular sector within society. So, bringing up all of the different stories that happen in our, animated storytelling and everything. And I'm intentionally being a bit vague here. I know I'm not giving specifics, but that is the one of the ways that I would say it can definitely appeal to the masses, right? With having our narratives. And this is something that I think on the scale that I'm thinking about has not been done yet. Shout out to Gumbe Kids, which is an incredible television show right now that I believe reaching millions through Amazon Prime and their subscription. So that is a wonderful show. For me, I want to continue the success that we have with Gumbe Kids, which has won a litany of awards, all across the board. I want to continue that. I want to help with building up the industry. The film and television industry, because we have so much immense talent in our country. We not only have actors, but we have cameramen, we have audio engineers, we have people who are better, than some of the people internationally that you would think. So for me, when it comes down to the concept of a collective, I think a television show or even a film would be the perfect example, or vehicle rather, to talk about our history, to package it in a particular envelope, and to let our people know this is who we are, this is what we've done, and this is what we're capable of. Because we have the capability to have those narratives and to create those things that are just as good as every other Emmy award-winning show out there. So that is one of the goals for myself that I want to do.
I love how you threw in there that we have the potential to be Emmy Award winning when we do
Yes.
this, and I'm sure you're going to be involved with it. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a pleasure to have Mr. Donato Hepburn join us today, all the way from Toronto. He is enjoying his time home, and we're just blessed that he's decided to grace us with his presence here today. Now, I'm sure you're wondering, how could you get in contact with him? So just before we wrap up, Donato, if people want to get in contact with you, how do they do that?
Absolutely. So, main ways of contact would be through my social media handle. So, my website would be www.denardohepburn.com. You can also reach me on Instagram at Denardo Hepburn. And it's the same thing on YouTube as well. I'm also just building out other social media verticals and platforms. So those would be the top three right now.
Perfect. Wonderful. I'm sure you're going to have lots of people reaching out to you, Mr. World-class actor, getting things done. And we're just so happy again that you decided to join us here on the Happy Hour on Guardian Radio 96.9. This has been DeAndra Cartwright, and we're happy to have had Donato Hepburn join us today. Thank you again. And we're going to have him back on soon so we can dive a little bit more into these things. Stay tuned for the rest of our programming here on Guardian Radio 96.9. Enjoy your holidays and please be safe. Bye bye.